Good. Well, thank you, everybody, for being with us. And today we're getting down to brass tacks, and we're going to start talking about what this five is all about. And what we're going to be talking about is and it's sort of the theme for the rest of the day, the five levels of leadership. And, you know, this has been kind of done to death, the five levels of leadership. There's a bunch of different models of it. Some of you would be familiar with John Maxwell's five levels. You know, he's got, position, permission, production, something. And then, you know, Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great. How many have read that book, Good to Great? Fantastic business book. If you're in business, you should read it. We took our whole leadership through Good to Great a number of years ago when it first came out. And he talks about five different levels of leadership, too. But what most of these people do is they have five different distinct levels of leadership. And there's this, and then this is a different type. And we're going to talk. We've developed this five levels of leadership. And I think, and this is, you know, a bit immodest, I think this is how Jesus taught it. And Jesus actually, and he doesn't number them because, you know, that's not how Jesus worked. But he really did give us five levels of leadership. And as we go and look through the scripture today, we're going to look at it. And here's the key to what we're going to talk about in Jesus' five levels of leadership. Each one builds upon the next. And I think when we're done this, I think you're going to like it. And then we're going to have some workshops on it. But I think the most important thing for us to understand was that Jesus came, and one of his first missions was to build leaders. Would you not agree with that? I mean, the first thing he does is he goes and builds a team. He finds some guys to work with, and he was all about leadership development, and there was no greater leader than Jesus. And I think if you want to know something, there was actually a business book written called Jesus Christ CEO, and it was a business book using the model of Jesus because there's something in, I mean, who would know better than him? And a lot of times we think that Jesus was working on developing 12 leaders, and that's actually not true. If you look, he had quite a few more followers than that. And even though we can all, most of us, name the 12 apostles, how about these other people? How about Nicodemus, and how about Joseph of Arimathea, and how about Mary and Martha, and Lazarus? And these people were part of his team. His team was way bigger than the 12, and you see them as you read the Gospels. And when it was all said and done, on the day of Pentecost, there was 120 of them. And I don't think that these were random followers. These were people who have made a big choice to follow this martyr and to take their life into their hands. And he had quite a team that he had created. And I think that if you were to look at those men and women, they were all at various levels. And tomorrow I'm preaching a message called Take Me Higher, and I'm going to be basing it on Ephesians 3:20. It says, "Now to him who is able to do exceedingly above all that we may ask or think according to the power that works within us." And what he says is that whatever you desire in your life, when you get God involved in it, he's going to take you above and beyond whatever you could think and whatever you can ask. I mean, let's talk about Peter just for a moment. Use him for an example. Do you think Peter ever thought, ever in his life, that he would be the leader of the Jerusalem church and that he would be this guy that went down in history of really changing the world? I don't think Peter could ever imagine that. If you were reading the Gospels for the very first time in your life and you were reading about these characters in Scripture, would you have picked Peter as the guy? Well, you've gone, oh, there he is. That's the one. That's the guy that'll lead this thing. I don't think any of us would ever imagine, if you'd never read the Bible before, that you get to the book of Acts and you go, seriously? This is the guy, Mr. Bonehead, Mr. Foot in His Mouth? You know, I don't think you would have picked him. And yet Jesus picked him and developed him and took some little obscure fisherman from the Sea of Galilee, and he has become really one of the most famous people of all of history. And so that's what Jesus does. He takes us above and beyond anything we could ask or think. And let me make this statement at the onset here, is that everything rises and falls on leadership. And whatever business you're involved in outside the church itself, your family, a school, an organization, everything rises and falls on leadership. And any success story that you can ever find will never be an accident. It's always about the leadership that's there. And the church is really no exception, and we're going to focus specifically on that. So here's the model. I'm going to throw it up on the, you've seen this image, but if you go to this first one, here's the five levels of leadership. And they're, I'm going to use these terms, server, influencer, equipper, multiplier, five-folder. And you probably can already figure out what that is. And here's what I want you to understand about these is that each one builds upon the one before. And that's why we've used this particular graphic, is that that layer on the bottom is server. You don't move from server to influencer. You add influencer to server. You don't move from influencer to equipper. You add equipper to influencer and so forth. And this is, I think, the distinction between Jesus' model of leadership and I think these other models out there. There's this type of leader or this type of leader. Well, these are actually all of the above. And what you do is you move along and you add to it. And the foundation stone, the basis of this, is the servant leader. And I'm going to take a few moments, and you've heard me talk about this many times, but I think it's important for us to lay the foundation and move across one step at a time. So the foundational level of leadership is really to be a servant. And here's what Jesus said about it. You'll remember the story. They're hanging out one night with the bunch, and there was more than just the disciples there. And we have John and James, and they're called the sons of Zebedee, right? Zebedee was their father. And their mother comes and brings them to Jesus. You remember this story? And it's almost like she had them by the ear. And she comes to Jesus and says, I have something to ask you. Would it be too much trouble if my two boys? Can you imagine this, Mom? I mean, they were the sons of Zebedee's, but they were also called the sons of what?
Thunder.
And who was Thunder? That was Mom. As far as I can, I'm convinced Thunder was their mother's name. Zebedee was the father's name. You boy, you come here. I got this. So she takes them to Jesus and says, would it be too much trouble if my two sons sat on your right hand and your left when you come into your kingdom? And of course, everybody thought Jesus was setting up an earthly kingdom. And so this was a pretty big ask. And how did the other 10 like that? It said they were indignant. And, you know, I think they were just jealous because their mom didn't think of it. That's what Chicky would have thought of it. And we know that for a fact. And so anyway, I love the fact that Jesus does not berate them. He does not criticize them for their ambition. But what he does is incredible. And you've heard me preach on it many times, but this is what he says. It's in Matthew chapter 20. He says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you. Say that with me. Yet it shall not be so among you. Boy, those are pretty strong words, eh? And then he says, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And so what Jesus does is he redefines greatness and he redefines leadership. And he says the fundamental aspect of leadership is to be a servant. And then he goes on and he says this, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but what? To serve and to give his life a ransom for many. And for Jesus, those are not just words. That is something that he actually did. And you will remember it was in John 13. I think it's really an extraordinary story. And again, they've had dinner. They're hanging out. And Jesus goes and gets a towel and puts it around his neck and a basin of water. And who remembers what he did? He washed their feet. Now, I don't think we have a good perspective on this. I really don't. Because in their culture, that was something that a servant would be wash the master's feet. And their feet were not like our feet. We wear shoes and socks. They wore sandals or bare feet. And their feet were disgusting. And, you know, they were cracked and they were calloused and they were full of dirt. And the job of washing feet belonged to the lowest servant of all. And in today's culture, it'd probably be equivalent to the person whoever washes the toilet. And some of you are going, that's me. Yeah, somebody has to do it in your house, I get it. But you know, that's who this was. And it was somebody that would come in and wash your toilet, someone who would come in and wash your feet. And so for Jesus, don't miss who this is. The King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Son of the Almighty God, gets down on his hands and knees, and he starts washing his disciples' feet. And Peter wigs out. You remember this? And he says, I'm not going to let you do it. I'm not going to let you do it. How many of you can feel like Peter? How many of you identify with Peter? I'm thinking, I don't want Jesus doing that. I don't want anybody doing that, right? And Jesus insists. He says, no, I'm going to do this thing. And he washes all of their feet. And Peter, of course, you know, everything's, you know, over the top. Eh? Well, you know, then wash my whole body. He says, no, I'm not washing your whole body, Peter. I'm going to do your feet. Let's just, like, do your feet and call it a day, buddy. Peter, he's such a goofball. And yet he became the leader, remember? And so anyway, he washes their feet. And then when he's all said and done, I don't think they really know what's going on. And then he says, I've done this as an example for you, that you will do this for one another. Now, do you think that he meant that that's what we were supposed to do, is to literally wash each other's feet? I don't think so. He only did it once. He did it as an example, right? I don't think he was every day washing their feet. Okay, guys, line up. It's time for me to wash your feet. He did it once. He did it as an example, and he was making a point, and his point was that this is your job, is to be the servant of all. And if you can remember this, I mean, what an object lesson for him to do that. Do you think they ever forgot that? The day that, I'm sure later on they were sitting around, do you remember Jesus washed our feet? I mean, wow, it was incredible. Now, here's my question for you that have been around the church and particularly some denominations. How many of you have ever been to a foot washing service? Any of you, let me wave your hands. Wow, that's quite a few people. I've only been to one, easily the worst experience of my life. And I'll tell you what, like, we were at this, it was a pastor's gathering. We had our pastors and wives, Kathy, you'll remember this. And we were gathered, there was about 25 pastors or so, and our wives, and this group of people in this home. We were having dinner, and then someone, by the Holy Spirit, believes it's time for us to wash each other's feet, eh? Well, if I had known we were washing feet, I would have washed my feet before I came. How many of you would have done the same thing? I don't want somebody mucking with my stinky feet. And I was just so uncomfortable. And there we were. We took our shoes off and we brought out these basins and towels, and everybody's being so spiritual about this. And I'm thinking, I hate this. I am hating this moment. And so anyway, we got down, and I ended up having to wash the feet of Al Gordon. Some of you know Al Gordon of King's Fellowship, and so Al and I were partners, and we didn't have to wash everybody's feet. You got one person, you had to wash his feet and pray for him. So I thought, you know, if I'm going to, and they were doing this, they were ladling water slow over each other's feet and praying over it. I thought, if I'm going to wash his feet, I'm going to wash his feet. And so I grabbed a rag, and I started scrubbing. And I'm scrubbing his feet. I say, your feet aren't so bad. Well, he's super ticklish. And he starts, and he's killing himself laughing. He says, well, you could do that. I said, I'm washing your feet, man. I said, don't deny me this. And he's giggling like a little girl, and I'm scrubbing his feet. And I thought, okay, I got through that. I hope I never, ever have to do that again. But you know what? I feel a little bit like Peter, and the example stuck in my head about how important this is for us to be servants. And so here's one of the things about the staff here. I don't know if you know this, but the staff actually get paid to minister. Did you know that? And I know it doesn't seem possible, but we pay all these people to minister. And then what happens on these weekends, because the rest of you are volunteering to minister and they're being paid, but one of the things we ask our staff to do is we say, you have your job, and then you, like everybody else, need to find somewhere to volunteer in the church. And so we have staff that volunteer in Kids Rock and volunteer in youth ministry and volunteer in bike ministry and volunteer in all these different things. Larissa is one of our pastoral assistants, but she's up here volunteering on the worship team, puts countless hours into it. And we expect all of our paid staff to volunteer just like everybody else. You know why? Because they're not professional ministers. They're servants in the kingdom of God. And this is a fundamental part of who we are. And so this weekend, when they're here, none of them are allowed to clock in for this. They're not paid for this. Not only are they on, because you came on your own time, so we expect them to come on their own time. And we make no bones about this, that you're not being paid for this. And you're coming, and you're being part of this. And not only that, we expect you to serve. And so when you came last night, for example, you will see that our staff, as volunteers, was serving you, because that's what Jesus said. The greatest among you is to let them be the servant of all. You serve all year long. So we come and we serve you. And we just want that to be part of our culture. It is part of our culture, isn't it?
Yeah.
By intention, by intentional design, we have people that understand how to serve. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story. Now that moment I had with the carpet last night, cleaning up after Tim Ham's mess. No, Keith, that was not my servant's heart come out. I'm just going to, full disclosure, I'm going to confess this. That was my obsessive compulsive nature overtaking me. I couldn't stand the fact that we had put in this $60,000 floor and one of our staff had dropped his meal on it, and then other people were walking through. I couldn't stand watching this. And it had nothing. There was no servant attitude. I had such a bad attitude about that. And then Sherry was yelling at me. She said, "Pastor Mark, don't worry. I'll clean it up. I can't do it now." I said, "I'm cleaning it up right now." She says, "You don't have to do this." I said, "I have to do this." And see, that's what obsessive compulsive disorder is. And so now you know what was motivating me. So I'm not taking any credit for that, but I will tell you a different story that happened at our leadership event this fall when we did our leadership appreciation. Again, you all showed up, the staff served you, and then when you go home, the staff all stays and cleans up the big mess that you made. And so we were cleaning up and doing the tables and doing the dishes and taking out the garbage, and I was taking out the garbage. And so I get out to the dumpster, and we have huge bags. You guys made such a mess. And we had huge bags of garbage, and I'm throwing them into the dumpster, and the dumpster was overflowing. And so I climbed up into the dumpster, and I'm in the dumpster, and I'm standing in the dumpster, and I'm bouncing up and down like this on the garbage. And Tracy Trotti, where's Tracy? There's Tracy back there. Tracy was one of the latecomers. Most everybody had gone, so this was not a show like it was last night. And Tracy came by, and she was standing there in disbelief as her senior pastor is in the dumpster, jumping up and down and knocking the bags down. She says, "Pastor Mark, what are you doing?" And I said, I'm stomping down the garbage so I can get more in it. She says, "Why are you doing that?" I said, "Because I'm on garbage duty." "What do you mean, why am I doing that?" And then she walked away, you know, bewildered. You were bewildered, weren't you? Hey? You weren't she wanted to take a picture, but she didn't know if it was appropriate to take a picture, honest to goodness truth, of her pastor in the dumpster. She doesn't know I, like, go through the dumpster for food for my family. So anyway, she sends me an email the next day, and she says, "Pastor Mark, I just want to thank you for being in the dumpster last night." She says, "I wanted to take a picture. I didn't know if it was appropriate to do, but," she said, "thank you for leading by example." And it was so cute that you know, she recognized that. No, and I'm having fun, and I'm playing with this story, but I don't want you to miss it. I don't believe that any of us are ever above any job. And that's why Jesus was washing their feet. Let's not miss that. All right? So we have this story in the book of Kings where we have Solomon's son, King Rehoboam, comes to become the king. And he's a young man, and he's a rookie, and he doesn't know what to do. And so he goes and he asks the elders what he should do. And I don't know if any of you remember what the elders told him to do. And he said, if you will serve the people, and if you will care for the people, they will love you and they will serve you all the days of your life. Do you remember that? It's a powerful thing. He's telling the king to serve. And then he goes to his peers, the other young men that he grew up with, and he says, what do you think we should do? And they said, you know what? Your father was a harsh man. You should be even harsher. And whose advice did he take? The young men and not the elder men, and he did not become the servant that he was supposed to be. And the kingdom of Israel was divided in the days of Rehoboam because he did not take the advice of the elders. And you see, leadership is all about using our position and our role and our giftings to serve others. How many of you would know who the CEO of New Flyer Industries is in Winnipeg? His name is Paul Sobry. And Paul Sobry, and he's taken this company, and they bought Motor Coach Industries, and they're an international success story, building buses, both the city version and the highway version, and they're doing really well. And he's a very sought-after speaker. And one of the things that he does, and he goes around speaking to colleges and whatever, and my son, Jordan, is doing his MBA, and one of their speakers, they have these CEOs from different companies came, and the man was Paul Sobry. And you know what he talked about? He talked about servant leadership. And he said, you know how you build a company? You know how you build a great company? You know how you become a successful leader? He says, you have to learn how to value your employees, and you need to learn how to serve them and care for them. And if you want to get the best out of them, you've got to give them your best. And they told him this story. And he said, the very first thing I did when I took over in 2011 of New Flyer Industries, I looked at the employee parking lot, which was an absolute disaster, and I convinced the board to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to pave it and curb it. So when the employees came to work, they had somewhere decent to park their car. That was the first thing he did. And he says that one single thing changed the morale entirely amongst the staff and the employees at New Flyer. And, you know, compare that with Versatile over there. Anybody been to the Versatile employee parking lot over there? It's just a block away from here. It's a disaster. You can't even drive through it. There's so many potholes, and it's half gravel and half... It's just a mess, eh? It's owned by this Russian dude, and he doesn't care about people. And so... that was the judgment. But I love Paul Sobry's concept about servant leadership. So that's the first thing, is we the server. Now, the reason I spend some time on this is to remember that this is the foundation. And we don't leave serving to become an influencer. What we do is we add influencer to server. And the influencer is someone that is beginning to lead non-leaders. So the influencer is actually not leading leaders. We'll get to that. The influencer is leading non-leaders. And many of you are already in that role. The rest of you need to move into that role where you are influencing non-leaders or leading non-leaders. And another word for it that Jesus used was disciple. And he says, go into all the world and make disciples of all nations. And an influencer or a discipler is basically, and essentially just sort of the same thing. And Jesus helped people. What Jesus did was he was an influencer. He was a server, but he was always an influencer. And here's how I'd describe it. He never left anybody where they were. He always tried to influence them to a higher level. Would you agree with that? He didn't just go and minister to their needs and leave them there. He went and ministered to their needs, and then he tried to bring them up to a higher level. And that's what an influencer does. And you know, give you an example of that. I think it's in John 5, where you have the man at the pool of Bethesda. And he's been there for 38 years. He's lame, and he can't get into the pool. He thinks the angel's going to come stir the water, whatever. And so Jesus heals the man. And then when he departed, who remembers what he said to him? Go your way and sin no more. What? Lest the worst sin come upon you. And he didn't judge him. He healed him. So he clearly wasn't judging him. But he was indicating, look, you have to change the way you live. There's something wrong with the way you're living, and what you need to do is you need to up your game. And Jesus never left people. Don't miss this. In every single instance where he is ministering to the needs of people, he's also calling them up to a higher level, and he's trying to disciple them, and he's trying to influence them. The Sermon on the Mount, who was he talking to in the Sermon on the Mount? Leaders or non-leaders? Non-leaders, right? It was, who, in particular, it was the multitudes, right? He had thousands of people on the Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount, pretty light-duty stuff. Not even close. I mean, he was challenging people to come up to... See, Jesus wasn't content to just leave people where they were in life. And that's what the influencer is. The influencer takes people to the next level and tries to... they may not be leaders, but what you're trying to do... And we're going to have a workshop today on being an influencer. And how many of you have heard this expression? We use it all the time. And it's this... You can't change other people, you can only change yourself. How many of you have heard that? You can't change other people. Well, if we can't change other people, then what are we doing in this business? You can change other people. Take a stab at it. Did it look like Jesus was trying to change people? He spent his whole life in ministry trying to change people because they weren't doing a good job. And we live in a world full of people, and we have a church full of people that don't know right from wrong, their marriages are a mess, their families are a mess, they're living, you know, despicable, sinful lives. Even in the church, people are living like this. And for us to make this conclusion, well, we can't change others, we can only change ourselves, is pretty defeatist. And you can change other people. The big question is how. Now, here's what I want to do. Like I said, we've got a whole workshop on this, but I want to give you a couple of thoughts on this. Because there's really... only two ways that you can influence people, and you can do it through manipulation or inspiration. Manipulation or inspiration. And so what I mean by manipulation is, I mean, in Jesus' day, the Roman government had come into Israel, occupied the land, and they were trying to change people and trying to change people's behavior, but they were doing it by manipulation and threat of violence. And if you don't do this, we'll kill you, basically is what they were doing. And governments and organizations and businesses oftentimes try to change people through manipulation or through coercion, right? The church has fallen into that. And what we've tried to do is we've had all kinds of rules and regulations, and people, you know, you just keep these rules and regulations, and there's a word we use for it in the church called legalism. And you know what? You actually can't change people with legalism. It doesn't work. You might be able to get them to curb their behavior, but you don't change their beliefs on it, and they do it against their will. And so, you know, for example, you know, this issue of abortion, for example, probably every one of us wishes there was a proper abortion law. People wish Roe v. Wade would get struck down in the United States. So supposing we have an abortion law, is that going to stop abortions? It's not going to stop abortions, because what you're doing is you're just making it illegal. You're not actually changing people's belief system. And see, so the alternative is to inspire people. And what Jesus did was he came and he inspired people to live to a higher level. And that's the key in all of this. And, you know, I see Heather Weeb back there. She works for the Crisis Pregnancy Center. You can't manipulate any woman into ever not having an abortion. But you can inspire her to keep her child. And see, that's what they do. And that's what the influencer does. The influencer always needs to keep that in mind, that our job is to inspire others to a higher level. You know, is Karen Blevins here today? Karen's story of her granddaughter is great. She prayed for her granddaughter for 16 years. She was brought up in a pretty nominal Christian home, didn't know the Lord. And so she prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed. And then her granddaughter went on... I'm not telling you anything out of school, because she told this story at her baptism a little while ago, the granddaughter. And she went to Texas, and she was on holidays, and she ended up meeting these people from this youth group. And she was so inspired by them, she said, whatever they have in life, I want that. And she gave her heart to Christ because she wanted to be like these young people that she met in Texas. And now she came back, and she got baptized here a couple of months ago. She told that story in front of the congregation. She's on fire for the Lord. She's leading people at school to Christ. And you know what? Nobody, you know, Karen couldn't manipulate her into coming to Christ, but she through the example of others was inspired. And see, that's what the influencer does. They inspire people to the higher level. Now, second thing I want to say about this is this. Here's really a key on this. When you're trying to influence people, it's never about the what, it's about the why. See, if you try to get people to do something, to act a certain way or to do things a certain way, and you say, this is what you need to do, that never works. What people do to be inspired is they have to figure out why they would want to do it. And if you can figure out the why, then the what comes by itself. And here's the big mistake we often make, is we focus so much on the what, and we read the Sermon on the Mount, we say, well, Jesus said this and Jesus said that, and so then we try to ram it down people's throats. And as long as it's just the what am I supposed to do, they're not going to get it. And what they will be influenced by is the why. Now, I'll give you an example. Jesus said to his followers, it was actually in the Sermon on the Mount, so he said to everybody, he said, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Love your enemies. How many of you think that's pretty strong advice? So you take this, non-Christian, dopey person, selfish, going through life, and say, well, my advice to you is to love your enemies. How's that going to work? It's not going to work. If you tell me what to do, it's not going to work. But see, what he did, and don't miss this is super important, is he told them why. He said, love your enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be like the sons of the Most High. So he told them why you would want to love your enemy, because he says, you will be the sons of the Most High, or in other words, you will be like God. You will be like the Father you're trying to get to. This is Christ-like or God-like, and there's a great reward. Maybe not on this earth, but there will be a great reward. And so he always inspired people with the why. Why would I want to do that, not what? And I'm just really trying to reinforce this point because it's so important that's really what we try to do in this church. And I don't know if you've ever noticed that even when I preach, I'm always provoking people to think things through. And, I'm telling stories and I'm joking and stuff. But the whole time, I'm trying to throw out that why. Why would you want to do this? Why would you want to act like that? Why would you want to change? Because I believe we can change people. But what we have to do is we have to inspire them with the why, not with the what. All right? So let's move on. And then we have the equipper. Now, the equipper is the next level. And like once I said, again, it's still a server, still an influencer. Now you become an equipper. And the equipper is the person that begins to identify leadership potential in others. And what they do is they begin to equip them for future leadership themselves. And so they're, now at a whole other level. I guess I'd describe it like this. The fundamental shift is that as a servant or even as an influencer, we're busy ministering to other people's needs. And then the shift becomes equipping others to minister to others' needs. Are you following this? And Jesus actually, or Paul, quoting what Jesus was doing, talks about this in Ephesians 4. And he says, for the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry. To equip the saints, the body of Christ, for the work of the ministry, so that they would begin to do that. And so that's what the equipper does. The equipper takes people to that whole new level. And there is a reason why the majority of churches in North America, Canada, and the United States are under 100 people. And in fact, most of them are somewhere between 50 and 100 people. Because 50 and 100 people is the number of people that you can effectively minister to their needs more or less by yourself. And what we have is and God bless them, I'm not criticizing them, but we have pastors that have not figured out how to equip others to minister. And what they're busy doing is they're ministering to people, but they're not equipping others to minister to people. And so then what they have is they have this congregation that expects them to do everything. And they're leading all the prayer meetings, and they're doing all the teaching, and they're doing all the training, they're visiting the sick, they're praying for everybody, and they're knocking themselves out. They're very good people. They love people. I'm not saying they don't. But what they do is they've reached their limitations, and they can't figure out why their church can't get past 50 or 75 people. And we find the exact model when Jesus fed the 5,000. I don't know if you've ever thought about this story. So they got 5,000 men plus women plus children. So there's thousands of people there. And there's no food. And Jesus, and we always call this Jesus feeding the 5,000. But if you think about this story, Jesus didn't feed the 5,000. Who fed the 5,000? Yeah, well, God's always a good answer. But his team fed the 5,000. And do you remember what he did? He broke them down into groups of how big? 50s and 100s. Why? Because that's as many people as somebody can minister to. You're only going to be able to feed dinner to 50 or 100 people, and then you're kind of physically, that's the limits of your capabilities. So he breaks them down. Now, he multiplied the food. I'm not denying that. But then he had the disciples go and his followers, whoever they were. And I think Jesus' team was beyond the 12, like I've said. And he sent them out to feed the 5,000. And that's a bit of a model for us, that that's how you do it. You can't care for everybody's needs. What we need to be doing is equipping others for the work of the ministry. And so, again, there'll be a workshop this afternoon on that for those of you that are in that sort of framework, and you'll be doing that. Now, just give you a couple of quick thoughts on that. Here's some keys on this. I think number one is to help people catch the vision. See, people aren't going to want to equip others unless they catch that vision. And so sharing and communicating that vision, the why, is really important for the equipper. Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to? Well, so that they can minister to other people. And what we want from all of you eventually is we want all of you to move from servers onto influencers and onto equippers so that you're not just serving and influencing people, but that you're equipping them for the work of the ministry. Second thing is to help them identify their gifts. And a lot of times people don't understand their gifting and who they are. And so you help them identify their gifts. And remember, their gifts and your gifts might be two different things. So that's a really important thing. If you're equipping people, you don't try to jam them into a role that might not fit who they are and their gifting. So the gifting is super important. That'll be talked about in that workshop. And then, of course, what you have to do is you have to give them an opportunity to practice in a safe place where failure is not fatal. And this is really key. And we try to produce an environment here at Church of the Rock where failure is not fatal. And that we allow people, we give them opportunities to test their wings and to grow. And this is one of the great and brilliant things of the multi-site model, honestly, because we have guys and gals, doing things on Sunday morning and pulpit speaking and stuff that they might never have opportunity to do if we didn't have these campuses. And so we have these great opportunities. You put them in places where, you're moving them along. And I want to, I really thrashed Tim Ham last night. And so I think it's only fitting that I would maybe tell another story about him today just to make him feel really good about himself. I think Tim, I love the example of Tim because I think he is the quintessential reluctant leader. And those of you who know Tim know who I'm talking about. When we ask him to do something, he goes, oh, there's this noise that comes out of him. You recognize that noise, Derek? Oh, and it comes out of him. And he's like so reluctant. And so Tim, when Tim came onto staff, how many years ago was it?
Staff,
15. 15 years ago he came on staff. And he was not Pastor Tim. He was our IT guy. And he was in our IT department. And he taught us how to use the Google and, and stuff like that. And, and surf the interweb and all those really important things. He was the IT guy, and we stole him away from Convergys, and he came here, and we weren't really thinking, not even in the slightest, about him being in ministry. And then as we saw him, we saw, boy, this guy really has a servant's heart. And so we started moving him along. The next thing you know, he's involved in youth ministry, and he's a volunteer there. And then he ends up as our youth pastor. And then this reluctant guy finds himself every weekend, in fact, eventually twice a week, speaking and preaching to the youth in this church. And then, then we recognize, boy, he's doing a really good job there. And then we had this whole thing with the online church. where we were trying to get this going, and we thought, well, here we got a guy who's actually all technical, Mr. IT guy, and knows something, and maybe we could marry those two things. So he became our online pastor, and you've all seen Tim in action, and you stand back and you go, he's really good at that. He's really good at that. And we just gave him opportunities to step out and to lead where it wasn't fatal. And then eventually we thought, you know what? He's doing such a good job on the online. I bet he could pastor real people. They hate that joke. And of course, as you know, Pastor Tim, in 2 weeks' time, is going to be the man standing in front of the Niverville congregation. And it's all because people along the journey have recognized his gifting and given him opportunities to serve in a place and lead in a place where it wasn't fatal. And the reluctant leader just keeps on stepping up to the challenge. And that's how people grow. Remember last night, the rubber band? Yeah. You stretch them and stretch them and stretch them and stretch them. Oh, by the way, Tim, I forgot to mention this. You're going to be really excited about this. I volunteered to have you take the main stage at the Lifelinks conference coming up in October. So you're speaking at it, buddy. Where's that elastic band? All right, I got it. I was waiting for that. Thank you. All right, let's talk about the multiplier just for a moment. In the book of Genesis, God comes to Abraham and he says, in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply you, and you will possess the gates of your enemy. And let me tell you something. You don't possess the gates of your enemy by blessing. And that's when we serve, when we influence, we're blessing people. It's when you begin to multiply that you begin to possess the gates of your enemy. And one of the reasons why Jesus was so successful was what he did. His mission was to multiply his efforts. And the very, very, very first thing he did was he went and got 12 young men that he thought could be the future and carry on. And he said this very extraordinary thing to them. He said, these works that I do, these works and greater works shall you do because I go to the Father. How many of you think that's extraordinary for Jesus, the guy healing and raising the dead, to tell his followers that they were going to do greater works? That, to me, is mind-blowing. I said this in a sermon a couple of months ago about that verse. I said, you know what? I don't believe it. And I had all these nasty letters from people saying, well, where's your faith if you don't believe it? What's wrong with you? I thought you were the pastor. I think they missed my point. When I said I didn't believe it, it was just such an extraordinary thing for Jesus to say that somebody else was going to do greater works than his. But I think the key to that verse is that collectively they will do more because he was multiplying his efforts. And the thing that he had to do was he had to reproduce after himself and not only multiply the number of people, but also to multiply the effectiveness of these things. And it's, of course, a great amount of time and energy that goes into such a task. I'm going to give you, again, we're doing a workshop on the multiplying, but I want to give you just a real quick model that I'm hoping you all can remember this. This is what Jesus' model was. It was so simple. This is what he did. He took people, he went and gathered people. He went and got them. He gathered them. He didn't wait for them to follow him. He went and gathered them. And then he says, come with me and just watch what I do. And so number one is they watched him do what he did. And for the first year and a half, that's all they did was watch him. And then he shifted it and he started to send them out. Remember, he sent them out two by two? And he said, go and preach the gospel and heal sick, raise the dead, cast out demons. And he sent them out. And so first they watched him and now they did it and he watched them. And then eventually he left. And so now they just did it. So he did it, they watched, then they did it, and he watched, and then they just did it. And at some point when we've multiplied, you know, sure, there's accountability, I get that, but at some point we just let people go and do it. And because you know what? God's moved us on or whatever. And if we've done a really good job of multiplying people, they don't need us around anymore. And so that's how that model works, right? I know there's a lot of information. Nobody's taking notes. You're just super smart. I appreciate that. Last thing, somebody's taking notes. Good. Where did you steal that pad from? That looks like it belongs to
my wife.
Yeah, I thought it was. So last thing is the fivefolder. And the fivefold, and of course, again, this it says that Jesus gave gifts unto men. And some are apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. And of course, that's the fivefold ministry. And we're not going to take a bunch of time to talk about that. But those are the ministry gifts. And it's interesting, there's five of them. Remember I said that Jesus gave us, I think there's five levels of ministry in this. And this other level. And this is not something you choose. This is something only Jesus chooses. And these gifts, the apostle, pastor, prophet, evangelist, and teacher, they're actually, it's not the gift of the pastor or the gift of the evangelist. They are the gift. And they're the gift to the body of Christ. And they're all of these things that we just talked about. They're the server. They're the influencer. They're the equipper. They're the multiplier. And then they have specific giftings that are necessary for the body of Christ. And I joke about Keith being the prophet, Pastor Keith being the prophet. And the reason I say it, even though it sounds like a joke, is because he is. You know, Keith has the mantle and of the prophet. And he's a gift as a prophet to us as a congregation. And we have these gifts, these fivefold gifts, and there's only a few of them because he says some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists, etc. And so I don't want to take any time on that. We'll talk about that another time about what those gifts are. But that's the, that fifth level that there are a few people that finally get to.